trap you with the left, you will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, it's like I'm on an island by myself, please don't make me slap you with the left, you will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, it's like I'm on an island by myself, God, please protect me if this shit go left.
Son of a bitch. Welcome to the show, everybody. Got a good show scheduled here for you on Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day. So we're going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump's approval rating. And when you compare it historically to other presidents, how he's sitting, I don't think this is going to be a surprising story, but the specific numbers might be a little bit surprising. So we're going to get, I'm going to lead with that in just a second here. We also have Goldman Sachs involved in another scheme to enrich themselves and screw us all over. Got the details on that from the International Business Times. We also have Nina Turner setting the Democrats straight, but a lot of Hillary Clinton loyalists on Twitter are not a fan of what she's saying. And later on in the show, we have Rush Limbaugh, who... Oh, classic Rush Limbaugh. He and his callers, seem to be smitten with the Republican in Montana who likes to physically assault reporters. So I have a clip about that, and there's a lot to say about that. The lunatic who's leading the Philippines declares martial law, and lighten it up a little bit later on in the show when I give you the top 10 all-time porn searches. So you'll get to see what kind of kink people are into. All right, so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started here, and we're going to do that with Donald Trump's numbers. See how popular he is as president. 538 did a historical tracking poll of Trump's popularity at this point in his presidency versus other presidents, and the results are pretty funny. So 39.4% of Americans approve of Donald Trump right now. 39.4. Keep that in mind now as I go through the numbers for the previous modern presidents. So we have Obama at this point in his presidency, about 130 days in, he had a 60.5% approval rating. It's a lot more than 39.4. No matter what your thoughts are on Obama, and as you know, I have many, that's a lot more than 39.4. George W. Bush, I mean, come on, George W. Bush is George W. Bush, one of the worst presidents ever. So clearly, by this point in his presidency, we all knew, like, oh, this isn't going to work out now, is it? 53.8%. So not only is he beating Trump's 39.4%, George W. Bush at this point in his presidency was above 50% approval rating. More than half the country was like, yeah, I approve of George W. Bush. Bill Clinton. Well, Bill Clinton actually, was doing really shitty at this point in his presidency. So he's going to be below Trump, right? No, 40.2% for Bill Clinton. You could, now, on that one, you could say, hey, it's kind of a wash because you have the margin of error, so plus or minus whatever it may be, 2 or 3 percentage points. You could say, it's fair to say, okay, whatever, they're tied, even though his numbers are a smidgen higher. George H.W. Bush, this guy only had one term, so clearly people were not digging him. Where was he at this point in his presidency? 61.9%. So above everybody, including Obama. Ronald Reagan, 68% approval rating. That's amazing. Reagan had a 68% approval rating at this point in his presidency. Jimmy Carter, again, one-term president. So everybody agrees this guy's shitty. He's going to be below Trump. He's going to be the first one that dips below. No, 64.2%. This is getting really, really sad. We got to find somebody, right? How about Gerald Ford, who nobody fucking cares about Gerald Ford, 45.3%, still way above Trump's 39.4%. Richard Nixon, I mean, come on, Richard Nixon, the tricky Dick Nixon, what an appropriate name. He's a dick, kind of like Dick Cheney. You know, step down in disgrace and all that. 62.8% for Richard Nixon at this point in his presidency. Okay, Lyndon B. Johnson, come on, Lyndon Johnson, you know, continued Vietnam, was a huge, like, everybody's like, what? Okay, we're sick of it, what are you doing? Stop, stop, stop. Okay, where was he? 78.6%. 78.6. He basically doubles Trump's approval rating. Lyndon Johnson doubled Trump's approval rating at this point in his presidency. JFK, 74.8%. Eisenhower, 73.8%. Truman, 87%. Donald Trump is the least popular president at this point in his presidency. Now, I don't know, I don't think there's, you know, you go much further before Truman, I don't, there's no reliable polling data. So in the history of polling data, Donald Trump is the least popular president at this point in his presidency. Oh, man. Oh, it's amazing. That's amazing. But there's a little twist in the story I'm going to throw at you now, and I think you may see it coming. Who's just about where he is in terms of popularity? The Democratic Party. You know, you throw a softball right down the center of the plate for the Democrats, and they're like, am I supposed to be holding something and swinging at this? Oh. They pick up a broomstick when they should have a baseball bat, and they try to swing a broomstick at it. Okay, tell me when, and I'll swing. We already did the softball down the center of the plate, and the catcher now has the ball. Oh, my bad. Did I mention Russia? We're not Trump. Vote for us. Oh, they're so stupid. Oh, my God. It's so sad. They have such an opportunity, but they don't. When you don't base everything, when you don't base your party on a philosophy, and you're just, your whole thing is just kind of, hey, we're not him, we're not Trump, we're not them, we're not the Republicans, and, oh, yeah, they're traitors, and they did treason with Russia or something. People go, okay, this is so tired. They're not talking about any serious issues affecting real people. So in some polls, the Democrats are a little above, a little ahead of Donald Trump. In other polls, they're a little behind Donald Trump. So they're right there. Remember, there was a poll that was released, I think it was 3 weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, that found that if the election was held 3 weeks ago, Donald Trump would still beat Hillary Clinton. In fact, he might beat her by a slightly larger margin. So, yes, it's funny to point this out and say, hey, he's the most unpopular president at this point in his presidency. But you always have to add the other fact, which is the Democrats don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're totally lost. And you have the most popular senator in the country caucuses with the Democrats, Bernie Sanders. And he's giving them the roadmap. Hey, here's what you do if you want to win. Here's how you create a party that can be dominant. You have to actually care about the people and push for things that they want, like Medicare for All and a living wage and free college and ending the wars. And they're like, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to pass on that. We're going to continue to be unpopular and try to pull the wool over people's eyes and stuff. So we'll use you as our mascot. You'll go out there for a goofy unity tour, even though you're unifying behind a brand that said we're still going to take corporate and PAC money. So we'll use you as like a mascot, but then we're going to try to trick everybody. But no, it's not working, which is why when Tom Perez came out at the unity tour and he gave a speech, he would be booed. He was booed all across the country. Because people were like, we don't believe you. All you is, we're gonna fight for our values. That's what we're gonna do. We believe in good things and we're against bad things. And you know, we gotta break down the barriers. And everybody's like, what are you saying? Can you say real things that affect real people and try to, you know, fix the country? Can you be a serious human being here? And they can't help themselves because they're beholden to corporate donors. So when you're beholden to corporate donors, you can't do too much change because the change will piss off your corporate donors. They don't want that. So that's why the Democrats have to try to walk that line. And it's just so disingenuous of the Democrats. The Republicans, what they do is they come out there, they're like, yeah, we're against you. And then they act against you. The Democrats are like, we're for you. But they still act against you in many respects. So you have to go the Bernie Sanders model. You have to go the Justice Democrats model, because that's the only path to victory and to success. And if you do go that model, it'll be overwhelming victory and success. By the way, if you haven't signed your name in support of Justice Democrats, please do. Go to justicedemocrats.com, read our platform. You'll see exactly what we stand for, exactly what we're fighting for. We're running candidates all across the country. And there's never been a better time to wage this battle, because the people who are supposed to be the opponents, the Republicans, and Donald Trump, look at how unpopular they are. This should be such an easy victory, but the Democrats, the corporate Democrats, are out there lost in the wilderness somewhere. Okay. Now, let's jump right into Goldman Sachs. And you're going to see this new scheme that they've cooked up and how you're part of it. The International Business Times uncovered another Goldman Sachs scheme to rob the American people blind. It says, how Gary Cohn could sell U.S. infrastructure to Goldman Sachs. So an infrastructure deal or bill could be a total ruse. They say President Donald Trump's administration this week touted an infrastructure plan that would sell off public assets to private financial firms. Left unsaid in the White House promotional materials was any mention that the Trump aide, who is overseeing the initiative, comes from a Wall Street firm that says it is seeking to buy up the very same kind of assets the Trump administration plans to sell off. Leading the White House privatization initiative is Gary Cohn, the former president of Goldman Sachs, who received a $285 million payout upon leaving the bank and taking a job as the director of Trump's National Economic Council. As Cohn has led the infrastructure privatization initiative from that perch, Goldman Sachs declared that it continues to look at new business initiatives that revolve around taking ownership of public assets, according to Securities and Exchange Commission documents reviewed by International Business Times. The six-page initiative rolled out by the Trump administration earlier this week detailed plans to spend $200 billion to incentivize additional non-federal funding and reward private investors for buying and maintaining government-owned infrastructure properties like bridges, airports, and toll highways. Those initiatives echo plans laid out by Goldman Sachs in its SEC filings dating back to at least 2008 in a section of its most recent annual SEC filings about the company's recent and planned business initiatives. The bank details its ongoing public infrastructure investments. Okay, so understand what's going on here. They're trying to enrich themselves at your expense. So this so-called infrastructure deal that Trump wants to do is basically to make our infrastructure no longer infrastructure. He wants to turn it into private investments, so people privately own what was our infrastructure. Well, that's no longer infrastructure. Infrastructure, you'd be talking about government publicly owned, fill in the blank, roads, you know, bridges, waterways, airports, all that stuff. They say, no, let's take that and give it to our buddies in the finance industry. And then what are they going to do? Here's how they're going to sell it. They're going to say, well, no, what do you mean? We're going to save money. Taxpayers are going to save money. And everything's going to look nicer because we're upgrading it. That's the argument they're going to make. In reality, what's going to happen? Again, it's just a ruse for Goldman Sachs and other financial institutions to make profit off of public utilities, to make profit off of the commons. What's supposed to be, hey, that's all of ours. You know, you look at national parks, we all own that. Roads, we all own it. They say, no, let's have them privately own it. Sell it off to them. And then what happens, by the way? In the long run, they're just going to jack up the prices for everything because now it's privately owned. What the fuck is to stop them? And they have a monopoly also. You have a bridge and you have a toll at the other end of the bridge. what's to stop now newly owned Goldman Sachs bridge for them to say, oh, I know that the toll was $5, but that was back when it was the government's bridge. Now we're making it $20. What are you going to do? You have to go over that bridge. It's the only option. And so now we're going to charge you $20. And by the way, there's also a little bit of a misnomer in here, because this is just like private prisons. You know, they say, well, private prisons, it's owned privately, so they can turn a profit. They can make money off of it. But there's a misconception that people think, well, if it's private, that means there's no government money going to it, right? That's incorrect. Because what they do is they privatize the profits, and they still take taxpayer money. So there used to be no profit margin. Then when you privatize it, there becomes a profit margin, and they still take taxpayer money. So it's government-funded, but they go, no, it's private, though. So again, it's just a ruse for them to make money off of it. It will be the same thing here. Goldman Sachs, I just told you, $200 billion to incentivize additional non-federal spending. So that's the government giving Goldman Sachs and financial institutions, hey, here's $200 billion for infrastructure. They go, thank you very much. And then they also make money on top of that. So they take money from the taxpayers, do the job for probably pennies on the dollar, and then they turn around and they'll jack up the prices of the tolls and everything else. Look, there are some things that just shouldn't be private. Like some things, sure, no problem. Consumer goods, no problem having that private. You don't want the government making your video games or your couch or your bed or things of that nature. But when it comes to roads and bridges and when it comes to airports, when it comes to the military, when it comes to prisons, you can't have the profit motive as part of that. Could you imagine if every road was privatized? Every time you made a turn on a new street, there'd be a toll to pay. But that's what they're effectively trying to do here. Trump's saying, yeah, we're going to do an infrastructure bill, and that infrastructure bill is making public infrastructure no longer infrastructure, turning it over to Goldman Sachs, and of course Goldman Sachs is going to rip you off. Their whole existence is to rip you off. Don't take my word for it. Look at their fucking record. Look at what they did right before the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. What they do is sell to unsuspecting clients subprime mortgage packages, and they were rated AAA, by the way. So they bought the ratings agencies to give them the good rating. And they say, you're going to make a lot of money. Buy these packages. These poor clients would buy these packages, and Goldman Sachs would turn around and bet on those same packages to fail. So they make money two ways, through fraud and gaming these clients, doing a scam on the clients, and then turning around and betting on the same products to fail. So they have nobody's interest in heart but their own. That should be clear at this point. They're a criminal organization. And Trump wants to take our infrastructure and sell it off to a criminal organization so that they can turn around and say, oh, we did an infrastructure deal, and see, everything looks a little bit upgraded. But look at the long-term consequences of it. The long-term consequences, we don't even have public infrastructure anymore. You're selling off giant swaths of our infrastructure to fucking Goldman Sachs. And again, in the long run, they'll let it all go to shit and still collect the money, because why not? Why not? You own it. You now have a monopoly on this infrastructure, on this road, on that bridge, and whatever the case is. So this is, it's a trick. What's happening is a trick. And another thing they're going to do is they'll turn around and they'll say, well, what do you mean? We're being bipartisan here. You're not going to get an infrastructure bill from any other Republican. We're reaching across the aisle. Infrastructure is a Democratic priority. So Democrats, what are you doing? Why can't you come to an agreement on this deal? Hello? We're doing your ideas. You say you like infrastructure. Republicans never talk about infrastructure. Well, here's Donald Trump, a Republican, who's reaching across the aisle, and he's being so reasonable, and he's saying, let's do infrastructure. So I don't know how the Democrats can't be on board with this. This is us doing their priorities. Yeah, but you're privatizing the infrastructure and turning it over to Goldman Sachs. That's like a worst-case scenario. That's like the one kind of infrastructure bill or deal where the Democrats should run fucking in the other direction, 100 miles an hour. So this is, fuck, man, it's a ruse, it's a scam. And this is what happens when Donald Trump, remember when he campaigned, there was a lot of rhetoric against Wall Street, a lot of rhetoric against Goldman Sachs specifically. He said it when he was against Ted Cruz in the primary, he said it against Hillary Clinton in the general. And then he did a 180 when he got in office. Now he has at least four Goldman Sachs officials in top administration positions. Gary Cohn and Steve Mnuchin, wrote his fucking tax plan and proposed his tax plan. They're the ones who did the announcement. They're the ones who had the press conference. Hey, let me explain to you what's in the tax plan. Goldman Sachs guys, when he was railing against Goldman Sachs. So he's the world's biggest hypocrite. But now the fox is guarding the fucking hen house. What do you expect? These guys who are in Goldman Sachs are crafting these bills. So everything, at the end of the day, is going to enrich Goldman Sachs and screw you over. Gary Cohn, they said it, $285 million payout when he left Goldman Sachs. An exit bonus, just like Dick Cheney with Halliburton. Hey, here, take a couple $100 million as you leave Halliburton. And oh, look at that, Halliburton happened to get no bid contracts when the U.S. went to Iraq. Remember that? It was the same thing. $285 million to Gary Cohn for an exit bonus. And by the way, that's not even all of it. More gets paid out over time. I think the number's like $800 billion or some preposterous number. We covered the story a while ago. $800 million, I should say. But what do you think's going to happen? Oh, he's going to take $285 million up front and hundreds of millions more later, and he's going to be principled about what's best for the infrastructure in the United States? No, he's going to try to rig everything in favor of Goldman Sachs and against you, the American people. This is fucking highway robbery. This is class warfare waged by the rich and Goldman Sachs on regular people, middle-income people, low-income people, tax-paying Americans. They're going to jack your tax money and give it to Goldman Sachs while they upgrade a little bit of the infrastructure and then also jack up your tolls and find other ways of robbing you blind. That's what's going on here, and everybody needs to understand that. Okay. Let me do one more. There's no short ones. All right, whatever. Let me do one more, then we'll take a break. There's an article in The Hill this weekend about healthcare. It's titled, Dems Plot Recess Offensive on Obamacare. It's by Rachel Rubin and Jesse Hellman. Now, I'm not going to bore you by going through this article, but the conclusion of the article is basically this. Democrats are going to defend Obamacare and attack Trump Care this week. They're off from Congress. And they're going to go in, and they're going to go on the offense and say, hey, this is such a bad bill. Look at the CBO score. You see that come up over and over in the article. CBO score, CBO score, CBO score. And here's the thing. At no point in the Democrats' offensive on health care do they bring up Medicare for All. It's not even mentioned in the attack. Okay, where do I begin with how little the Democrats know? So when you want to go on the offense against Trump Care, you can't just do half the picture. Half the picture is, look how shitty this bill is. That's half the picture. The other half is, now here's the real solution. They skip the whole second part. The second half, they're like, what? I don't think we need it. All, they just want to lambast the bill. And by the way, they do it in the most ineffectual way possible because a lot of Democrats will literally just say, you know, this is a bad bill. Oh, gosh golly, look at the CBO score. You can talk to regular people at a town hall and bring up CBO score. What does that mean? They're going to be like, what's the CBO? They don't know that it's the Congressional Budget Office. They don't know that it's nonpartisan. They don't know what the score is. So oh, CBO score is bad. Oh, what a strong attack, Democrats. There you go again, being aggressive and going on the offense and nailing it. No, you have to be super duper specific. 53 million people will be uninsured under Trump Care. Trump Care cuts $880 billion from Medicaid. Trump Care gives everybody in the top 0.1% an extra $200,000 a year. Trump Care has an approval rating of 17%. This is how you go on the offense. You got to be super on point. But no, they just keep bringing up a CBO score. All right, folks, let me tell you about the CBO score. That's really bad. I'm against it. Ha ha ha, vote for me. Ha ha ha. Oh, God, stop. Oh, my God, you're so bad. And then again, so they want to attack Trump Care in the most ineffectual way possible. And then the second part of the picture to them is, which is why we must protect Obamacare. That's not going to get people riled up and excited. Why? Because we already have, 10 million people still uninsured under Obamacare? We still have 45,000 people that die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. That's not me saying Obamacare wasn't a step in the right direction. Of course it was. We had fucking like 45 million people uninsured. So yes, it was a step in the right direction. But that's not enough. Slightly less shitty isn't an argument. Slightly less shitty doesn't win you elections. Slightly less shitty doesn't up your approval rating. You have to come out there, destroy Trump Care with the specific facts, like I just told you, repeat it over and over so that people know the numbers by heart. And then the second piece of the puzzle is every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. We need a single-payer system in this country. We need to cover everybody. Guess what? We'll cover everybody and save money in the process. Let's get rid of those rapacious for-profit middlemen, the private health insurance companies that price gouge you every day of the week. Let's do that. Let's save the 45,000 people who die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. What are we waiting for here? What are we waiting for? We can be number one in healthcare. It just requires a Medicare for all bill. We know what the solution is. And by the way, 60% of you guys want it, but they don't do it. So the Democrats are continuing to shoot themselves in the foot. Remember, Donald Trump is literally the most unpopular president at this point in his presidency in the history of polling. I'm not kidding. Going all the way back to Truman, every president at this point in his presidency was more popular than Donald Trump. There's only one other problem here. The Democrats are in the same ballpark in terms of their numbers. So you have to go in a new direction. Hillary Clinton ran on what you're trying to do right now. Trump, bad. Obamacare, good. She lost. So why would you try the same fucking thing? Trump care, bad. Obamacare, good. Yeah. She just lost on that exact message. She just did. Did you forget? But no, because the reality is a lot of these Democrats are corporate Democrats. And corporate Democrats also raise money from big donors. They take PAC money, they take corporate money, and a lot of that money happens to be from private insurance companies. So, I'll give you a little bit of change, but not a lot of change. I don't want to piss off my donors, so yeah, Obamacare is great, and Trump care sucks, and that's as far as I'm going. Okay, well then be prepared to keep losing elections. Because you're an ineffectual, pathetic party, and we're here to tell you the way to fix it. Bernie Sanders, who pushes for Medicare for All every day, has an approval rating of 61%. He's giving you the answer and the key. Now it's on you to accept it, and if you do accept it, you'll win overwhelmingly and you'll crush the Republicans. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Nina Turner sums up what the Democrats are doing wrong. So that's in a very important story. We'll go into the details, and then The Washington Post, they say democracy dies in darkness, but they're withholding facts from you about their writers, so the media also dies in darkness. We'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys.
Oh,
Because she really gave me a concise summation here. This is something I've been trying to say in so many words for a while. Let's see what she has to say about the Democrats. Nina Turner was a state senator in Ohio and a very prominent Bernie Sanders backer from early on in the campaign. And she's a strong progressive. So she went on CNN this week where she was asked about the issue of Russia, because that really is, you know, the only issue that they're talking about. Actually, scratch that. I don't know if it was CNN or MSNBC. You're about to find out in a second anyway. But her response to this question about Russia is exactly the response that I wish all Democrats gave. Let's watch.
About Russia. I mean, we have to deal.
How's this playing in Ohio?
No one in Ohio is asking about Russia. I mean, we have to deal with this. We definitely have to deal with this. It's on the minds of the American people. But if you want to know what people in Ohio, they want to know about jobs. They want to know about their children. I was just in California where California folks, especially the national nurses, pushing for Healthy California, a single-payer, Medicare for all kinds of things. I talked to a boomer, a baby boomer, who African-American baby boomer who lives right here in D.C. Russia is not in his top five. He believes that both parties are failing. I talked to a Gen Xer, a white male, who's in the union. He wants third party. We are losing. The president should be concerned about this. All Americans should be concerned about this. But if we were to go to Flint, they wouldn't ask you about Russia and Jared Kushner. They want to know how they're going to get some clean water and why 8,000 people are about to lose their homes. We are preoccupied with this. It's not that this is not important,
yes,
but everyday Americans are being left behind because it's Russia, Russia, Russia. Do we need all 535 members of the Congress to deal with Russia? Can some of them deal with some domestic?
Let me ask you.
She said it perfectly. Couldn't have said it any better myself. And she sums it up in a short little clip there. What I've been trying to say, perhaps ineffectually, for so many weeks, so many months. So that says it all, man. You know, the Democratic Party on a national level, the corporate Democrats, that's all they have now is Russia, Russia, Russia. You look at mainstream media, that's all they have is Russia, Russia, Russia. So now the big thing is Jared Kushner tried to set up a back channel to Russia. Okay, well, that's weird. And sure, that should definitely be investigated. But why is that more than just a, you know, like a quick 5-minute segment on the news channels? Oh, Jared Kushner tried to set up a back channel to Russia, and now the Democrats are going to investigate it. Anyway, now let's move on to other stuff. No, they don't do that because they want to speculate. They want to let their minds run wild with thoughts of Trump officials being traitors and being treasonous and being a puppet of Vladimir Putin, and, you know, it's a Manchurian candidate. And it's like a movie Hollywoodish idea. So it's like an appealing thought for the same reason a conspiracy theory is appealing. Like, oh, I have the truth. We are the small group of people that have the truth, and we're the brave truth tellers who are standing up and saying, look, see, look at what's happening over here. You don't know the real story. Now the entire Democratic Party, the corporate Democrats at the national level, that's the feeling they have with Russia, Trump in Russia. Oh, no, he's Vladimir Putin's puppet. He's doing Vladimir Putin's bidding. Oh, my God, let's talk about this for, like, days on end, weeks on end. That's not going to get you anywhere with the voters. Why? Because there are real people out there who are struggling. Remember when the Republicans, when all they would talk about is Benghazi, you turn on Fox News any time of day, Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. People started to roll their fucking eyes. You're only preaching to your bubble. Well, the same thing's going to happen with Russia. Now, unfortunately, it's like a little over 50% of the Democratic Party now thinks like, yeah, Russia tampered with vote counts and shit, which is crazy. But understand, when you poll partisan Democrats and a little over 50% of partisan Democrats say, you know, hey, we think this is a huge issue, how many people don't? So, you know, the Republican Party, they're rolling their eyes. Independents are rolling their eyes. And half the Democratic Party is rolling their eyes. So this isn't an issue you're going to win elections on. Now, again, should you investigate it? Sure. And perhaps, is there something there? Maybe there's something there, in which case we'll cross that bridge when we come to it and we'll take the appropriate measures. But right now, with the nonstop speculation and nonsense, it drives me fucking crazy, man. And as I've said to you guys before, they keep talking about Russia and, like, some sort of deal that Trump made with them. I don't know why people are searching when other deals are right in front of our fucking face. So, for example, Donald Trump is over $1 billion in personal debt to Wall Street. And guess what? He keeps proposing legislation that benefits Wall Street, deregulates them, cuts their taxes. Why aren't the conversations like, he made a deal. He made a deal with, you know, Goldman Sachs, because Goldman Sachs is in his fucking administration. They wrote his goddamn tax plan and presented it. So why is that not the conversation? He made a deal with Wall Street. He made a deal with Wall Street because both parties have accepted and like the fact that politicians make deals with Wall Street. That's just standard operating procedure. But you bring up Russia. Oh, my God, a deal with Russia. But the deal with Wall Street should scare you just as much, if not more, because they've totally bought our government. And they run the country and they rig everything in their favor and they fuck over the middle class and poor people. So he made a deal with Wall Street. Where's the endless coverage on, oh my God, what a corrupt puppet this guy is to the top 1%? They don't do that. They don't. Trump registered 8 new businesses in Saudi Arabia on the campaign trail as he was campaigning. And guess what? Now he's in office. $400 billion deal announced with Saudi Arabia, including $110 billion weapons deal made with Saudi Arabia. And he's going to let them build an Arab NATO, a Sunni Arab NATO, which of course will encircle Iran and be aggressive and yada yada. But there's your scandal. The guy has personal business ties to Saudi Arabia, gives them $110 billion worth of weapons, a $400 billion economic deal, even though they're one of the number one human rights violators on the fucking planet. There's your scandal. Nobody has anything to say about it. Why? Saudi Arabia is our ally, so shut the fuck up. That's fine. You want to be a sellout to Israel? You want to be a sellout to Saudi Arabia? You want to be a sellout to any of our other allies that you have? He makes his products in fucking 12 to 15 different nations. And then does policies that bias, you know, everything in favor of those countries. And we're not talking about those deals. It's Russia. And meanwhile, how many tangible policy positions has Trump taken that benefit Russia? Zero. That's literal. That's not my opinion. That's literal. Have they approved the multi-trillion-dollar ExxonMobil deal with Russia? No. Have they rolled back any of the Crimea sanctions? No. have they taken Russia's side in Syria? No. And by the way, that would be the proper policy if you ask me, because, you know, as bad as the Assad government is, at least they're fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So I would just stay out of that. But Donald Trump is now attacking the Assad government repeatedly. So he's against Russia, and so he's done nothing that benefits Russia, but still all day, Russia, Russia, Russia. And what Nina Turner is saying is, this is what you're going to fucking talk about. Half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. Half the country is poor, basically, is what that is. Half the country, Democrats, Russia, 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. Russia. This is all they have. They're a one-trick pony. They got nothing else for you. We don't have a minimum wage that's a living wage. Think about that. You could work a full-time job and not make enough money to survive. Russia. Russia. We have 7 different interventions going on right now. Drone strikes increased 432%. Trump just signed away your internet privacy rights. The list goes on and on. I could give you a million and one policies that have been done that the whole point is to screw over the middle class and poor people. They don't care. Russia, Russia. On Trump's first day in office, he signed an executive order that raises taxes on middle-class families. Russia! See, the corporate Democrats use this issue to attack Trump without having to actually take a stand on policy issues that matter. Because if you stand up on Medicare for All, you piss off your donors. You stand up on a living wage, you piss off your donors. You stand up on free college, you piss off your donors. You stand up for ending the wars, you piss off your donors. So the corporate Democrats are like, we're not going to stand up for any of those, even though that's what the whole party should be about, is for those issues. We're going to go Russia, 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 and therefore go on the offense against Trump without actually saying anything real or trying to help people and fix their lives. So that's what this is all about. Nina Turner sums it up. And the amount of hate she's getting is disgusting. There's a tweet yesterday that I responded to. It was that bad. Just somebody insinuating, like, this should really concern you. Why Nina Turner is, you know, basically acting like a Russian agent, basically, was the gist of the tweet. So, like, she said, like, running interference for the Russian government or something. It should really concern you. It concerns me. Why is Nina Turner running interference for the Russian government? Yeah, so Nina Turner's a Russian. Just say it. Just come out and say it, because you're a conspiracy theorist lunatic. Everybody who I disagree with is a Kremlin puppet. Just say it. Just fucking say it. Some of them do say it. Some of them come out and just say it. At least those ones are honest, not with the fucking innuendo and everything's based on innuendo. I was like, you actually care about getting Medicare for All and you want to fight on that issue and you want to fight on getting money out of politics and you don't want to talk about Russia? Well, you must be a sellout. You must be a Kremlin puppet. This is why the Democratic Party is polling in the same ballpark as Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump, at this point in his presidency, is the most unpopular president ever. That's literal. But the Democrats are right in the same ballpark. They have a layup election moving forward. 2018, 2020 should be landslides. We should have a supermajority after 2020. But they're fucking it up. The Democrats are fucking it up. Why? Because the most popular politician in the country, Bernie Sanders, with a 61% approval rating, he's given them the roadmap, and they're refusing to take it. Like, nope, we're good. We're just going to have you go out there and be our mascot and go ahead. You go talk about real issues. Tom Perez will come out there and say, we with our values, and we like good things, and we're against bad things, and we still take corporate money, and blah, 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 blah. So have Bernie Sanders be the mascot, try to pull the wool over millennials' eyes and people's eyes. Hey, come vote for us and shut the fuck up. And what they're going to learn is, hey, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. What we need is real candidates to focus on real issues and no more tricks, no more tap dancing around it like the National Democrats are trying to do. It's Justice Democrats or bust. You want to win? You go the Justice Democrat route. I'm going to go say go route. You want to win? That's the direction you go. You want to lose? Keep going with the corporate Democrats. Okay. All right, let's move on to Adam Johnson. Adam Johnson of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting wrote a great article in Alternet that I want to share with you. Washington Post can't stop running op-eds by lobbyists pushing their clients' weapons. They never disclose conflicts of interest. So the Washington Post in recent times, as many of you may have noticed, has been putting the sub-headline under all of their headlines, Democracy Dies in Darkness. So that's under all of their posts. And they're doing that because it's a hit on Trump. It's an attack on Trump. Like, look at this authoritarian guy over here. Democracy dies in darkness. We need transparency. That's what we need. But then they do this. So it's just comical. They're like, democracy dies in darkness. You got to have transparency. And then they run articles by people who they pretend are experts who are just lobbyists for the defense industry who are trying to push their weapons. Yeah, democracy dies in darkness. So does the media. And you love having the media be dark as dark can be. Okay, so here's what Adam Johnson says. The Washington Post has published, without any disclosure, an op-ed by Podesta Group lobbyist Stephen Raidmaker, publishing for weapons made by Raidmaker's client, Lockheed Martin. This is the third time in 2 months that the Post has published op-eds by defense industry lobbyists. Two previous op-eds were by staff columnist and BGR lobbyist Ed Rogers on behalf of Raytheon. In early April, after President Trump decided to bomb a Syrian Air Force base using Raytheon missiles, Raytheon lobbyist Ed Rogers took to the opinion section of Washington Post to lavish praise on the president. Rogers' lobbying firm, BGR, received $120,000 in 2016 for lobbying on defense and communication procurement, defense appropriations, and authorizations for Raytheon. So as far as disgusting corrupt tricks go, this is as bad as it gets. We've seen this on Fox News, for example, sometimes on CNN and NBC. What they do is they'll have on like a former general. They'll have on some, oh, prestigious, it's honorable to have this person here. They don't disclose that this person is now working as a lobbyist for Raytheon or Boeing or Lockheed Martin. And then that person will go out there and say, you know, isn't it great when the president does these attacks on countries that didn't attack us? Isn't it wonderful when we do these interventions and start bombing people? And don't we care about human rights and democracy? We should do more of this. So they go out there and push for policies that would benefit the bottom line of their companies that they're lobbying for. And nobody says anything. It's just, it's put forward as, what do you mean? This is just an expert. Who are you to disagree? Look at this guy. Look at this guy. This guy's a general. This guy worked in the industry. This guy, all that stuff. And then they don't let you know, oh, they have a financial conflict of interest to push in this direction. They don't tell you. So again, they say democracy dies in darkness. Yeah, democracy dies in darkness. We need transparency. The media as well. You're going to have somebody run, I love bombings, and you don't say, hey, this guy works for bombmaker.com. Like, oh, God. But that's the point, guys, is the rot is so deep that nobody bats an eyelash at this. Nobody cares. You know, it's just, what do you mean? Yeah, money runs everything. Do you not get it? Of course. That's the way our politics functions. All of our top politicians are bought. You have the media is totally bought. And then they wonder. They're like, fuck, man. We're not, corporate media is like, we're not doing as well as we used to do. It's weird. Yeah, really weird. You know, you run articles by people who make money to push war, and lo and behold, they're for war, and people don't really trust your source, trust you. Strange. So, yeah, we're trying to be the solution to this. You know, unfortunately, the internet has an upside and a downside. The upside of the internet, I'd like to think, is outlets like ours, independent media, new media. The downside is, you know, WorldNet Daily, InfoWars, the Sandy Hook is a hoax crowd, the Obama is a literal demon. Hey, look, a demon ran in front of the camera when Obama got off his plane in Kenya. Like, there's the downside of the internet is you could find anything, anybody saying anything. The most ridiculous, out-of-this-world conspiracy theories that make no sense and just aren't true. You could find that, but you could also find the best information and the people who are most objective and care most about the facts and helping regular people. So there's an upside and a downside of the internet, and I fully understand that. But there's no way that corporate media is the model going forward. There's no way that mainstream media is the model going forward. Because they're a joke. I mean, they've become a joke. And usually I spare my wrath. Like, I don't heap it on print outlets, because print outlets are typically better than CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and CBS, and NBC, and ABC. Usually they're better, print outlets. But this is an instance where you could say, you know, Washington Post is right up there with the worst offenders on TV, on corporate media on TV. because this is a way to try to push war and mask it in faux expert bullshit. Like, don't worry. Go watch TV or something. Go eat a sandwich. Pay no attention to what the leaders are doing. So they want to start wars with countries that didn't attack us. Don't worry your pretty little mind about that. Here, we have a guy who's paid by the defense contractor, so we're not going to disclose that fact to push for war, and you'll think he's an expert and everything will be okay. No, that's not okay. Okay. Now, let me move on to Rush Limbaugh. And the party he had on his show. Rush Limbaugh weighed in on Greg Gianforte, who, of course, is the Republican in Montana who assaulted a reporter, body slammed him the day before the election, punched him, broke his glasses, did in front of a room full of other reporters who said, yeah, no, there was no sign of aggression from Ben Jacobs, the Guardian reporter. He just put the little recorder thing near him, and then boom, you know, body slam, break his glasses, started yelling at him. So Limbaugh had to weigh in on this, right-wing talk radio host, and let's see what he and his listeners had to say about the incident.
In Montana, ladies and gentlemen, I must do something. I must join the chorus of people condemning what happened out there. This manly, obviously studly Republican candidate in Montana took the occasion to beat up a pajama-clad journalist, the pajama boy journalist out there. The story is he grabbed his neck and threw the guy to the ground because the journalist was being insolent and disrespectful and whiny and moany and accusatory, and the manly, studly Republican simply didn't realize that in the big stage you can't do this kind of stuff and kick the guy's ass to the ground. This cannot be accepted. This must be condemned. I wonder how many people in Montana now going to vote for the guy, though. Welcome, my friends, 802. Going to head to the phones here. We have Joe from Billings, Montana, leading off. Great to have you, sir. What's up? How's it happening?
Russ, glad to talk to you. I'm on my way in a few minutes to vote out here, as a matter of fact. And I wanted to say that if every Republican candidate in the country picked up a reporter and threw him to the ground, it would increase my chances exponentially of voting for them.
No kidding.
No kidding. Absolutely. Every single Republican candidate for the House, of course, there's no election for 2 years, but if they wanted to pick up a reporter and slam them, I would donate till I was bankrupt.
No, you realize you are openly endorsing the inflicting of pain.
Well,
Ben Jacobs is the reporter's name, by the way, and I think he should put some ice on it. But anyway, what were you saying?
I was saying I do realize I am openly advocating inflicting pain, but maybe it's for the greater good.
Inflicting pain for the greater good.
Absolutely, Rush. I think that the more reporters get thrown down, first of all, we might have better reporting and less rude reporters. That's one thing. And the other thing is we might have smarter reporting in the future, although one can never guarantee such a thing.
Now, how would that work? How would slamming a millennial young male reporter to the ground increase their reporting ability?
I think perhaps reporters might be more polite. That's one thing going forward. And perhaps they might think through. If you look at it,
let me see if I understand your thinking. They're sitting there thinking if they ask the wrong question, they're going to get beat up and thrown to the ground, and that might change the way they ask the question. Is that right? Might be more respectful. Well, there you have it. There's our first voter on the way to the polls in Montana, endorsing the actions of the Republican candidate, Greg Gianforte. And, of course, we here at the EIB Network, we thoroughly and wholeheartedly condemn all such behavior at all times.
Yeah, So I don't know whether Limbaugh was actually against it or for it, because his introductory comment there at the beginning sounded like he was like, oh, yeah, I'm so against this. Like, oh, he started laughing about it and shit. Now, by the end, that seemed like a slightly more serious condemnation, but I have no idea if Limbaugh was for it or against it. At the beginning, I would have said, oh, this asshole's fucking for it. By the end, I don't know. But his caller was clear. His caller was crystal clear. Pro-assault. Yes, he's in favor of assault. So, first of all, Limbaugh called the guy manly and studly. A guy who commits assault is manly or studly. Wow. And he called the reporter whiny, accusatory, and moany. Flip the script. You have a Democratic politician. Let's go with a black Democratic politician and a Breitbart reporter or a Daily Caller reporter, you know, whatever right-wing outlet you prefer. And the black Democratic candidate did the exact same thing to the right-wing reporter as Greg Gianforte did to Ben Jacobs of The Guardian. How would Rush Limbaugh and his listeners feel about it?
Well, Ben, oh, come on, it's different, and they're doing assault.
Yeah, but Gianforte did assault.
Yeah, but I like Gianforte, so it's okay when he does it.
When we do it, it's okay. When they do it, it's not okay. Okay, so you're a hypocrite, and you're an idiot, and you don't have objective standards. When my team does it, it's okay. When that team does it, it's not okay. So that means you are a tribalist. You're a primitive tribalist. There's no other interpretation. There's no wiggling out of that. You act like a Neanderthal, you know, back however long ago, in the field. You know, your team versus the other team. Is your primitive monkey brain runs everything. And you're so embarrassing and stupid as a human being that you actually go and admit this publicly on live national radio. Like, yeah, I'm a tribal fucking monkey baboon asshole. And I'm in favor of my side doing assault, but if the other side does it, I'll cry. You know what that reminds me of? There was a wrestler back in the day who would hit the person with the chair, and then when the person turned around, he'd drop it and be like, oh, don't attack me. Well, you just hit the motherfucker with a chair when he wasn't looking. What are you talking about? That's what this guy was who called up. Because he's like,
yeah, I love it when right-wingers slam so-called liberal journalists.
But then if you flip the script, you'd be like, don't do it. You're so rude and you're so mean and you guys are so bad. You're so evil. Democrats pro-assault. Look at how they respond. Look at how the same crowd reacts when there's anti-fascist violence. What do? They're like, oh, thugs. Thugs doing assault and property damage. Sometimes it's not even assault. It's just property damage. They're like, oh, property damage. Oh, terrible. Look at these guys. They're crazy. They're in favor of crimes. But when a fucking assault happens, well, my guy did it, so it's cool. And by the way, who is the first one out there to condemn the anti-fascist violence? Me, because I'm actually consistent, and I don't believe in committing violent crimes. Call me crazy, you know. I don't give a fuck what your political beliefs are, what your thoughts are. If you do offensive violence, you're doing offensive violence, and that is incorrect. That is wrong. If you're doing violence and it's not for self-defense, that's wrong. I don't give a fuck what your beliefs are, you know what your belief clearly is? I like doing offensive violence. Because that's why you did it. You are what you do. So you believe in that, even if you say, I don't believe that. Yes, you do. So, fuck Rush Limbaugh. He's manly, studly, and the whiny, moany reporter. You're an apologist for assault. Thank you. But I know you're the moral people. The Jesus crowd. This is the Republican Jesus crowd. Christianity. We're all about Christianity. We love Jesus. Anyway, let's talk about how assaulting reporters is great. And also, we love the First Amendment, a free press and freedom of speech. Oh, but they said something I don't like, and they're moany liberal reporters, so you can assault them. For them, we don't believe in the First Amendment. For us, yes. What a fucking joke this is. So the guy says, well, yeah, whatever, he's inflicting pain, but maybe it's for the greater good. Well, thank you, Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini. That's what they said. Well, sure, we do violence. Sure, I kill the evil Jews. Sure, wanted to nationalize all the property in the land. So sure, I killed people and did a purge. That's the fucking argument of every authoritarian that's ever existed. Sure, I do bad things, but I do bad things because it's for the greater good. So all these individual shitty things I do don't count. You get to write them off because the end goal, the perceived utopia, is the real solution here, and that's what we're going to march towards. But that's, again, that's fundamentally irrational, because what you're saying is, don't look at what I do. Look at the perceived thing I've created in my head that I'm trying to reach by doing the opposite of those things. So it's like saying, I'm going to be so moral by murdering people. Wait, what? Well, yeah, if we get rid of, if we murder everybody who's a bad person, there's no more murder, and go, but yeah, but you're murdering everybody right now. So you're, like, what do you, that's the same thing here. Oh, well, inflicting pain for the greater good. That's Joseph Stalin, that's Adolf Hitler, that's every authoritarian leader ever, and this guy has never, he never thought about it for a split second, you can tell. He goes, well, maybe we'd have better reporters and less rude reporters. He said, maybe reporters would be more polite. Oh, is that what America's about? We need to have polite reporters. See, I was under the impression that in a free democracy, you're supposed to have a First Amendment, free speech, free expression, so you can have a vibrant debate, and you can hold the government accountable. He says we'd have better reporters and less rude reporters if politicians can body slam reporters. Well, what kind of politicians would we have under that system? Politicians who resort to violence to shut up dissent. That's what we'd have. Oh my God, this guy is so stupid. This guy is so stupid. We'd have better reporters, more polite reporters, so I'm in favor of assault against reporters. And obviously your politicians are so holy that they don't need to be held accountable. The politicians need to hold the reporters accountable. The reporters don't need to hold the politicians accountable. Even though that's how this country was founded, the reporters are supposed to hold the politicians accountable. Authoritarian, tribalist idiots. Idiots. This is the level of discussion that happens on right-wing talk radio. Okay, let me take a final break real quick. When we come back, I got a poll of what things should be left to the government and what things should be left to the free market. That's an interesting poll. It was of people in Britain, so it's perhaps a little different than what it would be here in the U.S., but interesting stuff nonetheless. And the lunatic authoritarian and what he's doing in the Philippines. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Such a sure thing, such a sure thing, such a sure thing, yeah, 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 yeah.
with the left, the left. You will think so, I'm gonna help you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
All right, y'all, we back. We back.
Okay. Talk a little bit about people's view of government. YouGov did a poll of the people of Britain on which industries they think should be private versus which industries should be public and run by the government. So it's like free market versus government here. What are people's thoughts? So this is really interesting. Take a look at this. It's overwhelmingly on the side of public, have these different industries public. So 87% say police should be public. Healthcare, that's the NHS, National Health Service, 84%, that should be public. Public military, 83%. Schools, 81%. Royal Mail, 65%, Railway, 60%, Water Companies, 59%, BBC, of course, that's media, 58%, Energy Companies, 53%, Bus Companies, 50% support that, 35% say that should be private sector. And then the only ones that we get that are more leaning towards privatization than public is telephone and internet providers, 53% say that that should be private, and banks, 53% say that should be private, and airlines, 68% say that should be private. So isn't that fascinating? There's only three industries out of however many there are here. There's quite a few here, but only three industries, when you poll the people of Britain, they say, should be private. I would be really interested in seeing what this would be like in the U.S., because here's my guess. My guess is there's going to be fewer things that we want done by the government, but there's still going to be more things than most people would expect. So, and it's all how you phrase the question, too. I feel like in Britain they might be a little more sophisticated in their understanding of nationalization versus privatization. Here in the U.S., you know, you could have, if you phrase it a certain way, you'll use keywords, buzzwords that trigger people and say, I don't want that. But if you phrase it, like, you know, for healthcare, for example, if you phrase it, hey, do you want single payer? People are like, huh, what? But if you phrase it, do you want Medicare for all? They go, yeah, oh, yeah, totally. I love Medicare. Absolutely. So it's all, hey, do you like Obamacare? Ooh, no. Do you like the Affordable Care Act? Oh, yeah, that's not bad. So it's all in how you phrase it and how much people know. But my guess is you'd have, you know, a decent number of industries in the U.S. that we'd find people want to be nationalized. So, I mean, we don't even talk about it, but of course, the military, no question, you absolutely have to have that under civilian control, or else you have missionary armies, which is crazy. Private mercenary armies, it's fucking nuts. Warring factions, you wouldn't want that. The roads, obviously, police, fire department, the list goes on and on of things that are public that we don't even think about, you know? Like, there was the famous Tea Party protester who held up, keep your government hands off my Medicare, at a rally. And it's like, oh, you jackass, but that is government. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So, interesting poll. And YouGov, get on that for the U.S. Okay, now, let's go to the president of the Philippines and see what he's up to. The president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, is a lunatic. He's currently engaged in a genocide against drug users. I don't think that's hyperbole. That's not an overstatement at all. There's been about 9,000 people killed as a result of this. He's repeatedly told law enforcement, yeah, you can kill them. You can kill people who are drug users, who are involved in the drug trade. No questions asked. We're not going to bring up charges against you. You get a full pass. He even made some comment about how I would have the people in their own family kill them, but it'd be too hard for them. So go ahead. You go ahead and kill them. I want you to kill them. He compared himself to Hitler and said, Hitler, you know, killed all these people. I would love to be able to kill that many drug users. So the guy is just absolutely off his rocker. I mean, as authoritarian as it gets. And he recently decided to add to his list of crimes. He declared martial law. and listen to what happened after. This is from Yahoo News. But actually, before I get into it, let me just say, the Philippines actually does have a problem. There's, like, ISIS-aligned militants in a few parts of the Philippines, and they've, like, killed people and put their bodies in public so everybody sees them, and, like, kind of, we run this shit kind of thing. So he declared martial law to, like, fight back against that. But, of course, a guy like Duterte, you can't trust a guy like that with martial law, and you're about to see why that is. So here we go. This is from Yahoo News. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, congratulated last month by U.S. President Donald Trump for his murderous war on drugs, told his soldiers he will back them up if they rape women while enforcing martial law. The remark, though apparently intended as humor, drew stinging rebukes from human rights and women's organizations. Duterte made his comment in a rambling speech Friday on the island of Mindanao, where he imposed martial law last Tuesday to battle militants linked to the Islamic State. If any of them were to rape three women, he said, he would personally claim responsibility for the attacks, according to a transcript of the speech released by the president's office, The Guardian reported. Fight and I will pray for you and I will answer for everything, he said at one point in English in a videotape of his speech. If you go down, I go down, and I alone will be responsible. He added, just do your job. I will take care of the rest. I will go to jail for you. If you rape three, I will admit it. He also said, you can arrest any person, search any house. Now, his dodge after the fact, everybody's like, whoa, what the fuck did you just say? You're okay with your soldiers raping, and you'll take responsibility? He's like, nah, I was joking. Ah, come on, I was joking. But this is something Duterte has said repeatedly. Anytime he gets called out about anything, I was joking, I don't know what you're talking about. You know what the other thing is that he said he was joking about? I remember this story. As he's doing this murderous crackdown on drug users, news leaks, he uses fentanyl. He goes, no, but I have a prescription, and it's for medical reasons. And then people are like, yeah, but you said you kill. Fentanyl's, wait, like 100 times stronger than morphine. You don't need that. I don't give a fuck what problem you had. You don't need fucking fentanyl. Nobody needs fentanyl unless you're 3 days away from dying and you're stage 4 cancer. And so there was enough pushback over his comment of he has a prescription for fentanyl. He goes, no, I was joking. I don't know what you're talking about. That's not a joke. That's not like, I'm not saying, hey, it's a joke and I just didn't find it funny. I'm just saying that's literally, objectively not a joke. You weren't making a joke. You were serious and you were caught. So then you said, I was joking or something. So, massive hypocrite, killing drug users as he's fucking addicted to fentanyl. Hilarious if it wasn't so goddamn tragic. But same thing here. He goes, yeah, you go ahead and rape him and I'll take responsibility. And well, I was joking. What do you mean I was joking? Now, how do I know he's not joking on this front too? Because he said this in the past. In the past, an Australian missionary was raped to death in a prison riot. And he said, oh, yeah, it's so sad. You know, I wish I was first in line, though, because she's hot. He's not joking. This isn't like, ha-ha-hee-hee, aren't I funny? He's serious. And we shouldn't be surprised he's serious when, again, I repeat, he compared himself to Hitler. So this is a guy who's got many screws loose, and he's off his rocker, and now he's declared martial law. He said, search anybody, detain anybody, rape people, whatever. So lawless environment under Rodrigo Duterte. There's no question about that, and this is somebody who Trump likes cuddling up to. Now, I'm not going to make the hacky point that many other people make, like, oh, Trump is breaking with U.S. tradition and siding with dictators. Who are you kidding? The U.S. sides with dictators all the time. Fucking all the presidents suck the Saudi dick dry. So don't hit me with this, he's unique in his embrace of dictators. No, all the U.S. presidents embrace dictators. But it is a fact that he is embracing this particular dictator, and you know the facts about this dictator, and man, are they really something scary. Okay. Okay, now let's go to, I have two stories left, and then we'll call it a day here on this Memorial Day. One of them will be super light. Well, actually, one of them is a very good, like, happy story, and then the other one's super light and happy, so we're ending on a positive note here. It looks like we just got a huge victory in the fight against cancer. This is a really exciting story. It reminds me of how much I love science and medicine. A team of Swiss scientists have created artificial viruses that simulate the immune system, which in turn activates and sends a powerful army of so-called killer cells to fight cancerous tumors. Cancer cells are notoriously good at evading the immune system, but viral infections cause the body to act quickly, stimulating the system to use all available means to fight the unwanted invader. This new designer therapy capitalizes on the body's ability to quickly spot a virus so that when the immune system sees it, it can hunt down cancer, hopefully killing the tumor, according to the press release published by the University of Basel. Researchers led by Professor Daniel Pinschuer from the University of Basel, and Professor Doran Merkler from the University of Geneva built artificial viruses based on lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus, which can infect both rodents and humans. Although the viruses were not harmful for mice, they did produce alarm signs which were picked up by the human immune system. The team of virologists also integrated proteins found in cancer cells into the viruses. Infected with the harmless designer virus, it enabled the immune system to recognize these cancer proteins as dangerous, allowing the body to create a powerful army of cytotoxic T lymphocytes, also known as killer cells, which identified the cancer cells through their protein and successfully destroyed them. So I'm an idiot, and I don't know much about science, but from my interpretation of what I just read there, and anybody who's a medical person listening, feel free to correct me, but my interpretation of it is it's kind of like a cancer vaccine, where you train your body's immune system to respond effectively and adequately against actual cancer by, what's the word I'm looking for? Injecting, I don't know why it took me forever to find that word, by injecting something into the body, a virus that your body can interpret as cancer, and then it attacks that. So the next time the cancer protein is actually in you, and it is the cancer, your immune system can attack it. Now, I may have just butchered that in a million ways. I don't know. But the gist of the story is good news is a big blow against cancer. Now, we covered the Vice story about how when you inject certain viruses into the body, it like directly attacks cancer. I forget which viruses it was or which diseases it was. But apparently the downside of that was it was only very specific types of cancer that it worked against, and I think you need to be like young and healthy for your body to even survive that virus attacking the cancer. You know what I mean? So if you're like an older person and you have it, and you could die from the virus they just injected in you on top of the cancer. So it's like they were able to kind of cure cancer in some cases, but how effective is it on a grander scale? I don't know. But that was an amazing documentary. I suggest everybody see that if you haven't seen that yet. Killing Cancer or Curing Cancer. It's a Vice piece. It should be online. But now this is another way to attack cancer that's successful in testing here. So, you know, there's hope for the future, man. I just hope they create all this before I get to that age. Okay. All right, now let me give you the final story here. The website Pornhub just turned 10 years old on May 25th, and they released some really interesting facts on porn viewing that I want to share with you in celebration. So Pornhub launched in 2007, and within 6 months, it had 1 million daily visitors. Now fast forward to today, 1 million daily visitors has turned into 75 million daily visitors. That's unbelievable. Now, in 2007, 99% of Pornhub's views came from desktops. Today, 75% come from smartphones. So the overwhelming majority of, you know, porn viewing is happening on smartphones. But now let's get to the most important part of the story. Let's get to the meat of the story, pun intended. Top 10 porn searches. Number 10 is hentai, which is like Japanese cartoon porn. I don't get it, but hey, it's not for me to get. If people like it, you like it. More power to you. Number 9, big dick. I'll leave that as is. Number 8, big tits. Number 7, anal. Number 6, ebony. 5, mature. Number 4, teen. Number 3, amateur. By the way, I should be clear. Teen is 18 plus, of course. Number 3, amateur. Number 2, MILF. And the number 1 porn category that people search for is lesbian. Interesting. I've never been, that's never been my cup of tea. Don't really get that one, but hey, whatever, again, not for me to get. So, this is really interesting stuff, man. And actually what I was surprised by is how tame pretty much the entire top 10 list is, because there's a site, Pornhub has a separate kind of site where you can go and look at the live porn searches that people are doing and, like, what they're looking for. And I went to it for 5 minutes yesterday to see if any of these popped up. And none of these popped up. None of the top ones popped up. But this, oh, my God, the shit, like, two guys fisting grandma, fart wall anal. You know, things that you wouldn't ever expect were, like, the most common things. Like, just categories of porn that, you know, I would have never in a million fucking years thought anybody would look up. But that's all you see on the live searches. It's almost all stuff that you're like, what the fuck? I don't remember the site, but you could look, if you Google like live porn search database or something like that, I forget what I typed in, but it came up as one of the first sites. It's like pornmd.com or something. I don't know. But yeah, so the top 10 list is actually very, very tame. Go take a look at some of those live searches, and good googly moogly, is that a sight to behold? Okay. That's all I got for you, baby. So we're going to finish a little bit early here on Memorial Day. All right, guys, so enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day. I'm sure a lot of you have time off. I love you, and we'll see you tomorrow. Mwah, peace.